And an uncle of mine, my mother's brother, as he approached his 90s, sort of realized that he knew nothing about his grandmother. And he asked me, because I'm a journalist, if I would dig around and find out something about Maud Ewer, his grandmother, which I did. And within about half an hour of starting work, I had come across a picture of her father in the uniform of the Queensland Native Police. And that was a heart-sinking moment, let me tell you. I quickly went to, Wikipedia in the hope that I had misunderstood the nature of the Queensland Native Police, but no, I was spot on. I knew exactly who they were. White officers, black troopers designed to enforce dispersals and killings on the frontier. And within about, an hour or so, out of a mix of embarrassment, shame, and curiosity, I decided I was going to have to write about this. And that's what I did for the next 4.5 years.
Yeah, I'm not surprised it took you 4.5 years. The amount of detail in here and history is just exceptional. So congratulations on what must have been just an absolute kind of enormous effort in the archives, let alone anything else. But I was really curious because you did kick off or start the book. But the reason for it was, I believe, a photo of Reginald, as you mentioned, that you discovered.
Yeah.
But we actually, you start the book, you start the book with the merchant Richard Jones, and someone who goes back, kind of even further in your family history. So why did you kind of start the book even further back in the past from where you kind of entered it, I guess?
Well, first on research, my co-worker in all of this was my partner, Sebastian Tesserero. They're my words, but a great deal of the research is his. And he is a former lawyer, and he has a passion for accuracy that is spectacular. And also, I had wonderful professional researchers working for us in the archives in Sydney and in Brisbane. But what happened as the research deepened was that the nature of the book changed, the book that I had in my mind. I had thought that I would write a book about the squalid adventures of Reginald Ewer and his brother Darcy, who was also an officer in the Queensland Native Police, and follow their time in the force, which was in the middle of the 1860s, very soon after Queensland broke away from New South Wales, and at the most brutal, in the most brutal years on the Queensland frontier. But what I found was that the family story, if I went back a couple of steps, would actually explain the commercial pressures, the political foundations, and the practical reasons why slaughter was let loose through the Australian bush. Because these Ewer boys, their father, so we go back, their father, they were brought out from the Thameside slums when a rich Sydney merchant and would-be squatter married their sister. Why this 36-year-old merchant married a beautiful 19-year-old girl from the slums in London, it's never been completely clear, but he did. And then he looked after the whole family and he brought this tribe out to Australia to work on his whaling boats and to work on his property. And so this man, who so little has been written about, yet he was a member of the Legislative Council of New South Wales for roughly 15 years. He was the president of the Bank of New South Wales for about the same period. He was immensely rich. And in his lifetime, he seized or was granted or bought or chiselled over 600,000 acres of land for the sheep that he brought out from Britain. So he allowed me to tell a much wider, deeper story that fascinated me because it got into the commerce, the politics, and the brutality of what was going on in the colony of New South Wales. And I tell you, Ebony, I came away with the conclusion that just about everybody in that colony was a crook of some kind or other, a crook, a chiseler, a fraud, a deceiver. It turned into, for those who remember it, an immense National Times story, the paper I once edited, because this was all about the intersection of crime and government that led to, eventually, it leads to the hideous careers on the frontier of the Ewer brothers.
Well, I was shocked, I must admit, obviously by the violence of the book, but just how much you can pretty much draw a straight line from the politics of then to the politics of now. That wasn't necessarily what I was expecting when you started to go into that history. Did that come through really clearly for you as you were kind of uncovering that?
I was writing the last stages of the book during the referendum campaign. And I was hearing and watching on television the same arguments against the Aboriginal people that were used in the 1830s, you know, that were used at the very beginning of dispossession. They were being still used, still serviceable in Australia all those years later. And in particular, two in particular, the big one that those people who spoke up for Aborigines, they were called the friends of the blacks in those days, were city folk, generally prosperous, ignorant of the ways of the bush, and anxious to show off what great humanitarians they were. That's in the 1830s. And the same arguments in 2022, 2023. The other big argument, of course, is that all money spent on Aboriginal people is wasted. And in the 1830s, 40s, 50s, that was the argument used for giving the Aboriginal people no share whatever of the immense wealth that was being made on their lands. Nothing for education, nothing for support, nothing for housing, nothing, because it would simply be wasted. And then, you know, what is it, 200 years later, there we are, nearly 200 years later, listening to people saying, oh, all this money has been spent on Aborigines and every penny of it has been wasted, squandered, useless. The same voices, the same argument, and alas, the same results. There's been an argument for 40 or 50 years now that the problem was that we forgot the true history of Australia. I think that's too easy. What happened in Australia was the creation, an amazing creation of a fake history for the country, a fake history that we could be proud of. And that fake history goes something like Cook, convicts, sheep, gold, Eureka stockade, Gallipoli. And it's fake. And I think the thing that we most need to do in Australia at the moment is to understand that we've been fooled by the history, by the official history of this country. And it's happening everywhere. We're just dismantling this fake, warm official history of the country. And that's going on very, very fully. But the other thing, Ebony, I think we need to keep an eye on is what's happening in New Zealand at the moment, where New Zealand is held up as an example to us because of the decision in the 1970s to actually respect and enforce the Treaty of Waitangi. And now politics in New Zealand is talking about dismantling the treaty apparatus of Waitangi. And we do need to be reminded that great reforms, great changes for the better can be dismantled. We haven't got there yet, but we look across the ditch at New Zealand and they're walking backwards. And this is an alarming thing. We have to learn about the history of the country and understand the contemporary politics.